Foxconn Technology Group continues to build an industrial facility in Racine County, a project that includes around $4 billion in potential tax incentives and a promise of 13,000 jobs. But plans for the products coming out of that plan and the type of jobs it would provide are changing. In a recent interview with Reuters, Foxconn executive Louis Wu said the company no longer plans to build cutting-edge LCD television screens at the plant. This comes after an announcement last year that the project wouldn't include the high-tech Generation 10.5 factory that was agreed upon in a contract with the state. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief. He's been covering the Foxconn deal and the politics surrounding it. Sean, thanks so much for joining us. I hope you're staying warm.
Trying. Hey, Drill.
Hey. Louis Wu of Foxconn said during this interview that, quote, in terms of TV, we have no place in the U.S. Is Foxconn giving any reason for its change of plans?
So everything that we saw was, I guess, the developments today came in that Reuters article, and the quotes from Mr. Wu, where he talked about in that article that it's cheaper for the company to build these panels in places like China and Japan and then have them assembled in Mexico. And you heard the quote there. He said, quote, in terms of TV, we have no place in the U.S. We can't compete. So laying out in this interview with Reuters the reasons why a Wisconsin TV manufacturing plant does not make sense. We did learn last year that the company was hoping that a glass supplier would locate near the planned Foxconn site. So Foxconn doesn't manufacture its own glass for these giant screen TVs that it builds. It relies on companies like Owens Corning to build that glass, and it can't travel too far, so it needs to be nearby, an LCD manufacturing plant. Owens Corning wanted similar state incentives to what Foxconn got if it was going to build in Wisconsin. It didn't get those. It didn't locate in Wisconsin. And, you know, Foxconn was saying already last year that it wasn't going to build these giant TVs. Now it sounds like it may not build TVs at all in the United States.
So if it's not the TV screens that the company originally promised to produce, do we know what Foxconn will be manufacturing at the Mount Pleasant plant?
So what Mr. Wu talked about in that Reuters article, again, this is a quote from the article. He says, in Wisconsin, we're not building a factory. You can't use a factory to view our Wisconsin investment. And so what the company's talking about in this article that Reuters published is some type of research and development jobs, some type of design jobs in Wisconsin. There is a facility in southeast Wisconsin. Foxconn has opened up offices elsewhere in Wisconsin. And so I'm not sure what it would be. It's not what they talked about when they pitched the plan back in summer of 2017. And so exactly what it will be, you have to speculate some to get there because it's different than what was described.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief. We are talking about the announcement from Foxconn saying that they're no longer going to be building LCD television screens at the plant in Mount Pleasant and what that means for the state of Wisconsin. Now, this was originally pitched as a way to revive manufacturing jobs in southeastern Wisconsin, but that's been sort of a moving target. Can you go back and just remind us of where we've been and where we've come to in terms of the types of jobs that Foxconn is promising?
So when this project was initially unveiled in the summer of 2017, at the time it felt like it was coming out of nowhere, and it was a huge announcement. This is something that was first announced at the White House with President Trump, Governor Scott Walker, U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan. Everybody gathered at this big White House ceremony to announce these plans. It was going to be, you name the superlative. It was thrown in there talking about how Wisconsin was going to revitalize manufacturing in the United States, bring TV manufacturing back to North America. After that, the state of Wisconsin, through Governor Scott Walker, reached a deal with Foxconn in terms of what the state of Wisconsin would pay Foxconn if it invested here. And so if Wisconsin built this massive facility that then Governor Walker described as being as large as 11 Lambeau Fields, and if it hired 13,000 workers, it could qualify for up to $3 billion in state tax credits. So that'd be $3 billion in payments from the state of Wisconsin. That, in addition to that, we're talking about $4.5 billion in between state and local tax incentives for Foxconn if it built there and if it hired there. So that's something that, you know, Governor Walker agreed to the terms. The Republican-controlled Assembly and Senate passed the deal with a couple Democratic votes in each chamber, and it's been something that has been evolving since.
You spoke about the 13,000 jobs, and that was the magic number when it came to Foxconn. Where does that goal stand after these changes?
So the company today, Foxconn Technology Group, issued a statement early this morning. This is after the Reuters report came out, and said, "We remain committed to the Wisconn Valley Science and Technology Park project." That's what they referred to, the area in southeast Wisconsin. The company says, "We remain committed to the creation of 13,000 jobs and to our long-term investment in Wisconsin. As we have previously noted, the global market environment that existed when the project was first announced has changed. Our plans are driven by those of our customers. This has necessitated the adjustment of all of plans for all projects, including Wisconsin." So, I mean, they are acknowledging a change in their plans, a change in their strategy. They're sticking by that 13,000 job number, but, you know, they're not getting close to that number by any means. I mean, in the first year that they're operating in Wisconsin, they failed to hit their job benchmark. And so this is a number that they've been consistent about in their public statements. We just aren't sure how they're going to get there.
Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald, the Republican leaders of the state legislature, put out a joint statement today in response to the news. What are they saying?
They were critical of Governor Evers' administration in their statement. I mean, this is something where Evers has actually, in his public comments, has said that he wants to work for Foxconn since he's been elected. He said he wants to just be kept up to date on all their plans. Voss and Fitzgerald put out a statement saying that we don't blame Foxconn for altering plans in an ever-changing technology business, but they said, quote, "It's also not surprising Foxconn would rethink building a manufacturing plant in Wisconsin under the Evers administration." So the Evers administration didn't put out a statement responding to that, but they did say that they've been in regular weekly communication with senior leadership at Foxconn, and they were surprised to learn about this development that was reported today. So, while some of the information that was reported today has been previously reported, the Evers administration said other details will require further review and evaluation by the Evers administration. So it sounded like they were as surprised as everybody else to hear about this today.
Sean, we've got about 30 seconds or so. So what are you watching for next as the politics start to take shape around this latest news?
Well, Foxconn has actually come out since this came out and said, you know, the Reuters report was wrong. I mean, Louis Wu was quoted in the Milwaukee Journal, the Business Journal, excuse me, is saying, you know, we're still committed to Wisconsin. So as we talk now, there's some haziness about what's actually going to happen. I think I'll be watching for what they tell the Evers administration, whether the Evers administration feels like it's been assured of anything, and whether, you know, Wisconsin's deal with Foxconn gets adjusted at all.
Sean, thank you so much for getting us up to speed. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief. He joined us to talk about the Foxconn facility in Racine County, which the company is saying won't manufacture the LCD television screens that were part of its contract with the state. Winter, especially today's bitter cold, is the perfect opportunity to go through your belongings, from closet to kitchen to junk drawer, and eliminate whatever it is you're not using. Maybe you've already done that with the New Year's cleaning spree or inspired by Marie Kondo's Tidying Up on Netflix. But getting rid of unwanted stuff is a little bit different of a project than deciding to do so. Our next guest has some ideas for making a little money in the process. Nicole Spector has written for many publications, including The New Yorker, NBC News, The Atlantic, and more. She wrote the piece, How to Sell Your Unwanted Stuff, for NBC News. Nicole, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Sorry, you're
freezing there. I'm in Los Angeles.
Oh, lucky you. Thank you so much, Nicole, for spending a few minutes with us. eBay and Craigslist used to be the big selling platforms. And before that, people listed classified ads in local newspapers. But now there's a whole new world of online selling platforms. E-commerce is a huge deal now, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I really think that with the advent of technology, mobile, even social, we've seen an explosion in online marketplaces. There's really nothing you can't sell online.
When we're going through our things, not all the unwanted items are going to be the type of thing we may want to resell. So how do we decide, okay, these items are good to try to sell, and these items are maybe better to donate or find other homes for?
Well, you're going to want to do a little bit of research. So if you're selling fashion, it's very easy to look on Poshmark or eBay and just get an idea of what your type of item is selling for. And then you're going to also want to check for damage. Unless you have a really rare vintage item, like say a Susie Perrette dress, who was a big fashion designer in the 50s, something that's valuable, or a Chanel piece that has damage, then you can probably sell that for a pretty good price. But unless the collector is after it, then you should consider donating it. If something is damaged, or if it's very out of season and it's a fairly run-of-the-mill brand like H&M or something, it's best to hit up the donation centers.
Well, you mentioned eBay and Poshmark, so let's start by talking about eBay first. That's one most people are likely familiar with. It's also a website that people can use as a tool to figure out different price points for their items. How would you go about using eBay to sell your sell things that you don't want?
Well, I should disclose I'm pretty neutral in terms of all these platforms, but and I actually use eBay more as a consumer. I find it's the best place to get the deals, and I don't know if it's the best place as a seller to go, because sometimes you're let's start with what you should do. What you should do is decide, do you want to get a flat fee for this? If so, you're going to list it as a buy it now item. If you want to try and get, you know, see how much you can get on a bid, for instance, if you're putting up a new top designer thing and you're starting your bid really low but could go as high as, you know, hundreds of dollars, then you can do a bidding. But that's taking a chance. There are items I've won that are, I got, you know, like a new Vera Wang blouse recently for 99 cents. So you're going to want to be careful. I suggest if you have a new with tags item that was, say, a Christmas present you don't want, or perhaps you missed the time to return it, I would do a buy it now option, which is where you would say, you know, this is this retail that's $70. I'm selling it to you for $50, and I will include free shipping. That's always a good perk, especially with the buy it now.
Is eBay a good place, though, to use as a price point?
I think so. I mean, if you want to find out, the best thing to do is to look at for what the retail price was originally. So if you're selling something from, say, Anthropology, find out what it went for initially on the Anthropology site. And you can do that just by looking historically through the site. And then go to eBay and see, well, what are people selling this for on eBay? But you need to sort of get your base price from both points, the original seller of the item and then what eBay is doing, because eBay shoppers are very savvy. And if they see you're selling something for $99 and someone else is selling the same thing for $69, they're not going to buy from you.
Nicole Spector, she has written for many publications, including The New Yorker, NBC News, The Atlantic, and more. She joins us, and she's written the piece entitled How to Sell Your Unwanted Stuff for NBC News. And we're talking about the different platforms that you can use to sell things that you may not want anymore. If you've got a lot of name brand clothing you'd like to try selling, which with some of the things that we talked about, Poshmark might be a good bet as well. For those of us who've never heard of it, what are we likely to see for sale on Poshmark?
you're going to see top designers as well as something very high end. So you're going to see top designers down to H&M and get the Gap. But you're going to want to check. Poshmark actually issues reports on what's been their best selling items or most trendy. Things like shoes do very well. Certain dresses do very well. If you're going to sell something like an H&M top, you can totally get away with it on Poshmark, but it has to be in pristine condition and it has to be something that's fairly rare that you can't, you know, that wasn't made in bulk per se. I think that Poshmark is great because they give you a prepaid shipping label, so you don't have to deal with that. You just ship it back to them and you can just, they'll take care of it. Whereas with eBay, it's more of a, I mean, actually with Poshmark, you do have to ship it yourself, but they give you the label, so you don't have to go to the post office or deal with any of that aspect. If you're selling something locally, like furniture, which I don't know if you want to get into that separately, that's a whole different ballpark. And while you can use eBay and other services for that, I do recommend going with a local site like Facebook Marketplace or Letgo.
Staying on the clothing topic, there's also something called ThredUp. This one's a little bit different, as you don't actually do the selling and communicating with potential buyers yourself. So how exactly does that work?
Well, ThredUp, as I understand it, is something where you're completely not involved in the process, which is both a blessing and a curse, right? You don't set the price of your items. They do a very meticulous inspection to see what condition, what it will sell for. Things like seasonality tend to come into play, though not necessarily. So you don't have any control. You just send it, ship it off, and hope it goes for a good price.
You know, it's interesting because there is always for a very long time, the train of thought that, you know, selling clothes on, you know, eBay or a different platform wouldn't be something very very lucrative, that furniture and electronics and, you know, computer equipment, that type of thing, are things that people mostly sell, or vehicles. But clothing has become very, very popular on these sites.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the area where it's most lucrative is in vintage clothing. Sites like Depop, which is one I actually didn't mention in my NBC piece, and Etsy I mentioned, I believe. But those are, so the way to make a lot of money doing this is to really treat it like a full-time or at least part-time business. And that's where you're doing a lot of branding on social media. You're updating photos every time you get new merch in. And you have an incredible eye for fashion and an incredible knowledge of fabric, designers, not just current designers, but older designers, people who, you know, beyond the Chanels of the world, but those vintage icons. There's so many of them. And once you get into that world, I do know of people who can make, you know, $1,000 a month at least.
We're talking with Nicole Spector. She's written for many publications, including The New Yorker, NBC News, The Atlantic, and more. She has written the piece entitled How to Sell Your Unwanted Stuff for NBC News. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you sell things on these online sale platforms? Where do you prefer to sell, and what has been your experience been like? Are there platforms you've used that we haven't mentioned? If you buy things from sites like Facebook Marketplace, eBay, or Poshmark, what have you bought and what has that experience been like? Would you do it again? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up this conversation in just a bit, right here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Darrell Conner. We're continuing our conversation with Nicole Spector. She's a writer for several publications like Vogue, The New Yorker, The Atlantic, and more. And she's talking with us about where and how to sell your unwanted items online. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you made some extra cash selling some of your things online? Which sites worked for you? Do you miss the days of plain old classified ads? Do you still prefer Craigslist? Have you bought items on these sites? What has your experience been like? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And let's do this. Let's go right to the phones. Let's go to Anissa in Appleton. Good afternoon, Anissa. Welcome to Central Time.
Hi. One of my most favorite apps is called Garage Sale. That's with a V. It's basically an online virtual garage sale that is locally founded. And I've seen it all across the state of Wisconsin, at least. I'm not sure if it's a national app, but I've bought things and sold things on there, anywhere from baby clothing to household goods, vintage pieces, and furniture.
Thank you for the call, Anissa. Nicole, what about sites like Virage or even an app like Nextdoor to sell items?
I don't know that Nextdoor, I don't know what their policy regulations are about selling things, but I do know that a site called 5 Miles is sort of describes themselves, I believe, as Facebook meets Craigslist meets Nextdoor. So, and that's a really great place to sell local things within a small network where you can sort of, you know, in a more neighborly fashion. I also think that Facebook Marketplace is a great way to sell locally, especially large items, particularly because even if it's not a full background on the person, you do have a profile and you sort of have some idea of who you're speaking with. And that is, I believe, generally safer than Craigslist.
Yeah. Speaking of Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist, if people find that shipping items is too much of a hassle, there are also many sites that allow you to sell locally, is what you've been talking about, Nicole. What advantages or disadvantages does selling locally offer when you use Craigslist versus Facebook Marketplace?
When you use Facebook Marketplace, I think you have a more limited network, but a more trusted one. It's obviously limited to your proximity. So only someone in Los Angeles will see what you're posting if you're posting something in Los Angeles. Whereas Craigslist, you can be in New York and say, oh, I'm moving to Los Angeles. What's there? The disadvantages with either is that you probably aren't going to be able to arrange pickup or want to, which means the buyer is going to have to, and that can be a big hurdle, which is why you see a lot of sellers saying, you know, they start selling a cabinet, say at $125, and then they've got to move, and now they're selling it for a dollar or giving it away for free. So
let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Lisa in Winona, Minnesota. Good afternoon, Lisa. Welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. I've sold numerous things on Marketplace, from tools to clothes, and I've put things on there, and it hasn't even been 5 minutes, and I've had hits on it and sold it. I've had no problem with people coming to pick it up, and once in a while they want to barter a little bit, but that's fine. But I've had really good luck with Marketplace.
Lisa, thank you so much for the call. Nicole, most people, when we've heard about platforms that they like to sell items on, Facebook Marketplace is right at the top of the list now.
Yes, I've heard the same, and I think it's just you're already on Facebook. Everyone else is on Facebook, for better or worse. It's such an easy way to promote things within your network and get people that you can count on to come, you know, Craigslist. I don't want to speak poorly of it, but I think that it's gotten really inundated with scammers. And, you know, it's weird to have someone come over to your house that you don't know. So in either case, please have someone with you if you're going to sell Facebook Marketplace or not. It's best to have someone with you.
Nicole, you had mentioned 5 Miles, and I wanted to go back to that. One of the advantages is that it's free and it has no transaction fees. How should folks be using this platform?
This is one that I haven't personally used, but from my understanding, it works very similarly to Facebook Marketplace, which also doesn't take a fee, and Craigslist doesn't take a fee. So that's actually a pretty common business model for these local apps. With this one, I have to say I'm not terribly skilled here because I haven't used it, but it does appear to be pretty user-friendly. And I think at best, you should list your things there and give it a shot. It sounds like it's especially good for, you can also do a donation portion. So if you're not selling something, you can easily just move it into that section, which is convenient.
We're continuing our conversation with Nicole Spector. She's a writer for several publications like The New Yorker, Vogue, The Atlantic, and more. And we are talking about where and how to sell your unwanted items online. You can give us a call, 800-642-1234. What have your experiences been like in selling items online? What is your favorite platform to use? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Nicole, tech items can feel like a burden to get rid of. You know, many of us are skeptical to buy used phones and electronics online, but also want to get rid of some of our own. You recommended a site for that. What can you tell us about it?
The site that I recommended is called Declutter. And that's a great site because they will just take your old tech and sell it at the price it's going for, check it out. A lot of these places where you sell tech, they'll refurbish it and do everything. You don't need to worry about it. I mean, an iPhone 7 is one of their most popular unwanted items, and meaning that sellers are unloading. And that goes, at least as of last month, those go for around $230. So it's an easy way to unload your tech and make some quick money off something you're probably never going to use again.
Is that a better option than, say, around the country in malls now, they have these little kiosks where you can drop off your old cell phone and they give you money right on the spot for those phones? Is it better to use the site that you mentioned rather than a kiosk in the mall?
I think it depends on how much work you're willing to put in. If you're willing to put something in a box and post it up and follow their rules and guidelines, you'll probably get more money doing it through Declutter. If you're in a hurry and you just want to get rid of this right now, then a kiosk is going to be your better bet.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of the things to keep in mind no matter what platform you choose to sell on. You know, first off, you talked about making sure the price is reasonable. You know, how do we make sure that what we expect to get on the item isn't asking too much or too little?
That's going to require research. If you're doing something like Declutter or ThredUp, which they control pricing, then you don't have to worry about it. But if you're doing eBay, Etsy, Poshmark, it's going to require just a little bit of time to know what the item would actually go for. If it's an historic item, what is it worth in the antique marketplace? That does require some, you know, some homework, unfortunately. But it's really worth it because that only takes a few minutes. And, you know, if something sells, you've got money there. And if you want to make this a long-term business, that's very viable if you're willing to put in the time as well with social media efforts and branding.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Courtney in Appleton. Good afternoon, Courtney. Welcome to Central Time.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
What was your question or statement for Nicole?
My statement was just that I really like buy, sell, trade through the marketplace on Facebook. I've used it to sell my last two vehicles, and I found it really nice how, kind of what you were saying, I could kind of look up the potential buyer's profile and message them to kind of see if they would be a good fit as a purchaser, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense, Courtney. Thank you so much for the call. Nicole, it seems that, you know, Facebook Marketplace may be a good site to sell vehicles on as well.
Yeah, that sounds like that's the winner all around today. I've never been in a position to sell a vehicle, but absolutely I would turn to that if I was in a situation to. Again, it's just having that extra level of trust. You know, Facebook isn't perfect in terms of being, you know, scam-free, but it's such an added level of security. So I do think that a bigger purchase, absolutely, especially if someone's coming to your home.
We have about a minute and a half left. So I wanted to ask this question. This one is a big one, especially if you're selling on a platform that allows its users to leave sellers' reviews, you know, to make sure that you're honest about the item's flaws. What can be considered a flaw to buyers?
It can be, you know, the most obvious thing as, you know, a rip. It can be something like the tag has a black Sharpie slash through it, which a lot of stores do to prevent returns. You'd have to disclose that. And that probably won't affect your price, something as minor as that, but you wouldn't be able to resell it necessarily. So you have to disclose everything. You need measuring tape. You need to take pictures. If there's a tiny pinhole, you have to photograph that and disclose it. And at least for say, this is reflected in my pricing, or please note, you might also want to put the word flaw in the subject title so that people know that there is an issue, especially if it's something that, you know, can't be fixed with dry cleaning.
Nicole, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate the time.
You too.
Nicole Spector has written for many publications, including The New Yorker, NBC News, The Atlantic, and more. She wrote the piece entitled How to Sell Your Unwanted Stuff for NBC News. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR if you have any tips for selling things online.